Stoll's frustration was mounting. 5 months had gone by since the first successful trace, and the authorities were as reluctant as ever to let him in on their side of the investigation. Finally, in late June, Stoll got a call from the FBI telling him that the hacker had been apprehended and his home and office searched. But Stoll couldn't pry loose a name. With the hacker caught, LBL no longer had to lure him in with its flimsy security. That day, Stoll's lab changed its passwords and tightened security. The attempts at LBL's system stopped. Stoll was able to pat himself on the back and at the same time expound to his colleagues on what he considered to be the moral questions raised by this act of illegal computer joyriding. These computer networks, Stoll argued, which scientific researchers, computer scientists, and students depend on for sharing information in cooperative work, and even for sending electronic love letters, assume a certain level of trust. And as the reach of the networks grows, so too must the trust. How, then, can computer scientists expect to build and maintain open networks, such as the Internet, if someone like the Hanover hacker is going to abuse the networks? For Stoll, the incident highlighted an insoluble dilemma: security versus information exchange. Stoll began to think about publishing the story of how he chased the West German hacker. In early 1988, he sent out a book proposal and prepared a technical paper for a computer journal on the various entrapment methods he had used. But in April, a few weeks before his technical article was to appear, he was preempted when a story about the Hanover hacker came out in Quick magazine, a West German hybrid of People and Vanity Fair. The magazine identified the hacker as Matthias Speer, a play on Marcus Hess's name based on the fact that both names, Speer and Hess, were also those of prominent Nazis. Mysteriously enough, the story relied heavily on Stoll's logbook, the very logbook that he had turned over to the FBI and CIA months before. Someone, Cliff decided, most likely the authorities in Bremen, must have leaked the contents of his logbook to Quick. Shortly after the Quick story appeared, the New York Times put the story of the West German hacker on its front page, mentioning espionage and the Pittsburgh letter for the first time. The laboratory then held a hurried press conference. Within a few days, the story of the hacker who had roamed freely inside sensitive U.S. computers was everywhere. One diligent reporter even managed to root out Hess himself, and journalists began to call his house. Hess took cover from the press. After his bust the previous June, he had stopped hacking entirely, but he hadn't stopped supplying Peter Carl with software to take to Sergey. In early 1988, Hess sent over a magnetic tape containing a copy of X-Windows, an advanced software program with the GNU Emacs program, the very software he had used to gain super user status at LBL as an extra bonus. He was rewarded with 2,000 marks. During his June interrogations, he figured out that his LBL excursions had been traced, but he was taken completely by surprise to learn that he had been monitored so closely, and he was shocked to see his photograph in Quick, a picture that had been taken through the window of his apartment while he sat at the computer. The Ballot letter in particular created quite a stir in Germany.